Hello, and you're very welcome to another edition of the Others, the Alan Kinsella podcast, where we look at small parties, groups and independents that have contested Irish elections over the years. This week, it's the turn of Militant Labour. Basically, the Militant Tendency organisation here prior to the renaming as the Socialist Party in 1996. Traces the party, the origins of the party, the time in Labour, and things that happened there, the expulsion from Labour, themselves in their own right as an entity, before the couple of elections, and then before the actual renaming. As ever, for left materials, the Irish Left Archive has been invaluable. And there's some other writings, such as those by John Cunningham in the book on Labour, that were a great help as well. Thanks to everybody who subscribed to the podcast. If you haven't done so, please do leave reviews and all that. Carry on, share on social media, etc. Please. Thanks especially to those who subscribe to the Patreon. It's patreon.com/electionlit, and help support the website and the podcast. If you want to contact me, I'm at electionlit on Twitter, Irish Political Ephemera on Facebook, Irish Election Literature at gmail.com, and irishelectionliterature.com is the website. Thanks. The Militant Tendency was founded in 1964 in the UK and was a Trotskyist group organised around the Militant newspaper. It was an entryist organisation. Entryism, in theory, involved being part of a bigger party, in Ireland the Labour Party, and in Northern Ireland the Northern Ireland Labour Party, the Derry Labour Party, and so on initially. And building up the party within the other, building up the tendency within the Labour Party until it was sufficiently able to stand on its own two feet. But they also, the members, also worked very hard, and they were initially, the main areas in the Republic anyway were in Galway and in Dublin, and militant members of the Labour Party would have campaigned for any particular Labour team. They didn't care whether it was, you know, the more socialist Labour politicians or some of the more conservative ones, and they worked away. And by working hard within the party and within the party apparatus, they tended to make themselves invaluable to the organisation and thus less likely to be expelled. And indeed, during the 70s, especially within the Labour Party, the real issues were over coalition and so on, and you had the Liaison Committee of the Labour Left organisation, which I covered in a previous episode on independent Labour in 1977, which led, which was kind of the far left within the Labour Party, that led to the foundation by Matt Merrigan and Noel Brown and so on of the Socialist Labour Party. And so, certainly during the 70s, although militant was very present within the Irish Labour Party, it kind of went under the radar a bit. Again, they were working hard and everything as members, but also because the likes of Brown, Merrigan and so on were a bigger thorn in the side of the Irish Labour Party than militant were. Now, there would have been others at the time, Michael D. Higgins, Emmett Stagg, among others, who were seen as far left, were part of the Labour left in the late 70s, early 80s, and so on. Now, in up until the late 60s, Militant had no support outside of Britain. Paul Jones from Derry was one to Militant's ideas when he was studying in London. He returned to Ireland and led to Derry roughly around the same time. A chap by the name of Finn Geaney, a Cork man, was over in London and became involved with Militant. Peter Haddon, John Throne, Finn Geaney and Peter Taff were central to the founding of an Irish section of Militant, the first outside Britain. Ireland's importance was indicated by the interest of Peter Taff, editor of the British paper. Throne, the most high-profile figure initially, grew up in Lifford, County Donegal, in a small farm family prominent in the Ormond Order, and travelled widely after leaving school in 16. On his return, press coverage of its anti-sectarian socialist prescriptions led him to seek out the Derry Labour Party, which was a unit of the Northern Ireland Labour Party. Throne was became the organiser of the Young Socialists, and the Derry Housing Action Committee. Throne and his comrades were centrally involved in certain episodes, such as the Civil Rights March organised by Labour-linked Derry Housing Action Committee in October 68 and the Battle of Bogside, the Battle of the Bogside in August 69. Paul Jones was the only member of Militant at that time in Ireland, and given Militant's orientation, the stance of Derry Labour had particular significance, and Jones was directed to join. So there was an embryonic organisation in Northern Ireland, and in 1972 a Militant Irish special issue appeared in January of that year. Articles from Taff, Haddon and Geaney, as well as Jerry Lynch and Brian Kinkead, showed were part of this, but this was significant as was the first Militant edition, or the first edition of Militant for specifically for Ireland. And later on in 72, I think, Militant was founded officially in Ireland. It organised within the Labour Party throughout the 70s and 80s, attempting to win the party towards socialism. And they also controlled Labour Youth for a period as well. I think they were instrumental in setting up Labour Youth. There had been a youth wing in Labour, but that kind of drifted away in the late 60s, early 70s. And so in the late 70s, Militant were very much part of the group that founded the new Labour Youth. And obviously they were very influential within the group. They also wanted people to engage with trade unions, become active in trade unions. In 1980, I think it was, Joe Higgins was elected to the Administrative Council of the Labour Party. And under the guise of Labour Youth and other militant people, they played a vital role in the Dunn Stores strike. So they were instrumental in helping out with the Dunn strike, both as Labour Youth and Militant. They would have done rotas for picketing, simple things like that, but also used their network, read the papers, leaflets and so on, pamphlets, and their position within the Labour Party and trade unions to further the cause of the strike and advertise the strike and gain support for the strike, which of course was very important, especially in the early days of the dispute. Meanwhile, in the Northern Ireland in the 70s, the Northern Ireland Labour Party imploded, and meant there was no Labour Party for Militant there to be part of. A group called the Labour and Trade Union Group, which was descended from the Derry Labour Party, and Millicent basically ran the LTGU, or the LTUG, as a front group there. And it put forward candidates in elections later on under that banner Labour and Trade Union group. And also later on they also ran under the banner of Labour Coalition in the north. There's a very interesting piece from a magazine called Perspective, 1984. And 1984 is the first time, I suppose, that people in Labour in the Republic were very aware of the threat Millicent posed to the party. This is a piece, anyway, it's on the Millicent philosophy. Millicent summarises its programme in four slogans: a 35-hour working week without loss of pay, £100 minimum wage, nationalisation under worker control of banks and major industries, a massive injection of state funds into public works at union rates of pay. In both Britain and Ireland, their programme is in accordance with the Labour Party policy. Millicent is an avowedly Trotskyite group, and these four demands represent their minimalist position. The theory holds that they can transform society by belonging to a working class party, which by attempting to implement their demands on coming to power creates expectations which the capitalist system cannot fulfil. To effect this, Trotskyite groups organised within working class parties a tactic known as entryism. Millicent believes that by continually making pure socialist demands on the Labour Party, they will reveal to the working class that the leaders of the party are not interested in creating a more just society. They believe this revelation will make the working class turn to them for leadership. Central to Trotskyite theory is the belief that revolution must occur worldwide, hence Millicent's links with similar thinkers in other countries. Just an aside, Millicent was a member of the Fourth International Committee for Workers International, the CWI, which had organizations all over the world. Millicent is a fundamentalist organization constantly referring back to the original writings of Marx, Lenin and Trotsky. They have little time for more recent thinkers who have tried to adapt these theories to the ever-changing economic system. Spontaneous revolution will be sparked off by the failure of the capitalist system to meet what are seen as reasonable demands. The Labour leaders in power at the time will be discredited by this failure, and the constantly Marxist leadership of Millicent will be able to harness this discontent. Other Trotskyite groups criticise Millicent for allowing entryism, a tactic they agree with, to overshadow the purpose of entryism, that remaining in the Labour Party has become more important than revolution. From this point of view, Millicent is no longer a radical revolutionary group campaigning for as the same as those laid out in the paper Millicent. Another piece in that, just reading from it. Mainstream members of Labour talk of how well prepared Millicent supporters seem to be for party meetings. The passing of resolutions at branch and union meetings often seems to be the primary concern of Millicent supporters. At such meetings, they support Millicent resolutions, frequently in the same terms. Much of the frustration about Millicent arises from the boredom induced by the repeating the same point several times. In Cork, local leaders were concerned that branch meetings were becoming tedious and important matters couldn't be discussed because of the time spent on resolutions. This repetition was apparent at the meeting we attended, where half a dozen people spoke from notes, making the same points using different examples. It is easy to see how the average party member arriving at a meeting after work with little knowledge of a proposal may feel overwhelmed. In an important sense, Millicent is being accused of working too hard and taking things too seriously. There is no denying the commitment of Millicent supporters They spend more time on party work throughout the year than many spend during general elections. They make a point of canvassing for all Labour candidates, no matter how conservative. In areas where they are strong, like Galway and parts of Dublin, they are the organisational backbone. According to former supporters of militant, activists are expected to give up most of their free time, what with selling newspapers in Rahoon and meetings. I ended up with one evening a week to myself. It is no surprise that with this level of commitment, militant supporters are largely young people with few family responsibilities. It has been strongly suggested that supporters make weekly contributions and have ideological and organisational meetings run by their own officers. Whether this is true or not, it is what many in the Labour Party suspect. Militant deny any and all of these activities, as if they were proven, they would be a clear breaches of the party's constitution. As Militant point out, other sections of the party regularly have private meetings. Nobody is going to convince me that the right-wing leadership of the Irish Labour Party doesn't meet separately, said Peter Taff. Militant supporters are encouraged to cultivate possible recruits. One Labour Party member who was wooed by Militant described repeated, apparently social calls by prominent Militant supporters. He was disillusioned with the group when, as he became more involved, he heard similar visits to potential recruits being planned. Militant's extreme dedication and single-mindedness led to this member to describe them as Labour's Legion of Mary. Many more likened them to Jehovah's Witnesses. Peter Taff claims Militant collects such large amounts of money because of the enthusiasm it generates for its ideas. A lot of the attraction of Militant appears to lie in the simplicity of these ideas. One Militant supporter defended their programme by saying, "I wonder what young people would be more afraid of, going on the dole or a guaranteed job with a £100 minimum wage. I don't know many people who would be afraid of that." There is no disagreeing with statements like this, which, in a more convoluted form, litter Militant discussions. Anyone on the left would concur with Militant's four-point programme, but as a revolutionary group, they have little interest in measures that will improve the everyday lot of ordinary people. Members of groups such as the Anti-Amendment Campaign and CND have commented upon this, remarking that any Militant presence is largely token compared to the energy spent in support of their newspaper. Taff claims that Militant fundraising does not divert funds from the Labour movement, but supplements them. He says Militant has attracted more people to the Labour Party than any other section of the movement. There can be no figures, however, for the number of people who have left because of Militant activities. It is fair to ask how many of these people really belonged in a supposedly socialist party in the first place. So an interesting analysis and look at Militant there, and there's actually loads more in that particular piece, but it gives you an idea of how people were looking at Militant at the time. On January the 17th, 1984, Gardaí Raid Labour Left Group. A special branch detectives raided the offices of an extreme left-wing group in Dublin today. The headquarters of the militant tendency Labour organisation was raided by special branch detectives as the controversy over a planned purge of the group by the Labour Party leadership continued. A group of four detectives led by an inspector from Dublin Castle entered the offices of Militant Irish Monthly, the Trotskyites group's newspaper, at 75 Middle Abbey Street around 12:15 p.m. with a search warrant. "They said they were looking for an unnamed individual," said Mr. Joe Higgins, leader of the militant group. Mr. Higgins alleged that the Gardaí had pushed people out of their way when they came into the offices before presenting the search warrant. The Gardaí press office confirmed that the raid had taken place but declined to give a reason or details of what had happened. Mr. Higgins said that it was more than coincidental that the Gardaí should raid their offices the same day Militant was in the news because of their socialist ideas. "We cannot fail to draw the conclusion that the act of blatant harassment is linked to the debate that is taking place in the Labour Party about our socialist ideas," he claimed. He called on Labour cabinet ministers to ensure that any harassment of party members on the left ceased forthwith and said that he would be lodging formal complaints with Dublin Castle and the Minister for Justice. Mr. Higgins stressed that Militant had always opposed acts of terrorism on the basis they did not advance the cause and were well aware of this. The Militant leader also declared that it denied the group were being funded from Britain or that it was practicing a form of political Mooneyism where people who joined could not leave. This was slander, he claimed, adding that Militant were not a separate organisation and that they were financed by subscriptions from Labour and trade unionists from north and south of the border. Although Militant deny they are a separate organisation from the Labour Party, the group have their own offices at 75 Middle Abbey Street and their own monthly magazine, Militant Irish Monthly, published by the Cambridge Evening News in England. The question of Militant's position within the Labour Party will be considered on Thursday at a meeting of the Administrative Council. Thornishtown Labour leader Dick Spring last night declared himself surprised at the Garda raid on the Dublin offices of the Irish Militant. Because of the incident, he planned to ask the party's Administrative Council to postpone consideration of a resolution seeking the expulsion from the Labour parties of members and supporters of the so-called militant tendencies whose views are reported in the publication The Irish Militant. The Stoner said that his decision to ask the AC to postpone consideration of the resolution on expulsion of militant tendency members did not reflect any lessening of his concern that the members of the party could not be members of organisations whose aims, structures and financing arrangements were inimical to the democratic base of the Labour Party. If subjects such as this are to be debated within the party, it cannot be done in an atmosphere that has been tainted by this sort of incident, Mr. Spring added. The officer board of the Labour Party decided on a majority vote to send its resolution on the militant tendency on its way to the annual conference in April. There is a majority in the Ord Corla, or the AC, in favour of coalition, and the resolution almost certainly would be passed by the body, depending on absences through illnesses or otherwise. It would be for the annual conference to take any final decision whether or not members or supporters of the militant group should be expelled. A major campaign within the Labour Parliamentary Party on the operations of the militant group is that the group is having an effect on the membership of Labour youth. Also, militants have been particularly vocal at local constituency level, to the extent that some members of the party have been turned off by continual arguments on political philosophy. Mr. Higgins, who has been prominently identified with the militant group, argues that the militants reflect the socialist philosophy of the Labour Party, which he contends is being swamped by the right-wing politics and attitude of Fine Gael, the major partner in coalition. It's quite interesting that the Garda raid drew attention of the, you know, where people would have been slightly aware of Militant. All of a sudden there was articles on Militant in the papers, like this from the Sunday Independent. Group in Garda raid now has 500 members. Militant tendency, the group at the centre of last week's controversial Garda raid, has a strength of about 500 members. Approximately half are members of the Labour Party, mainly in Labour youth, while the remainder are affiliated to trade union groupings in the north. The main general activity of the group is the sale of their newspaper Militant Irish Monthly, which sells 6,000 copies. Sales from the magazine go to make up what is termed the fighting fund of the group. The fighting fund was just £300 10 years ago, after Militant was set up there by John Throne and Peter Thadden. Today it is set at £40,000. This is £10,000 higher than last year's target, when it is estimated that a total of £25,000 was raised. So where does this money come from? Well, we don't receive any Russian gold for a start, because the Stalinist system in operation there would see us as a threat, says Militant editorial spokesman Dermot Connolly. He also confirmed that the group does not receive any money from the Militant Tendency group in Britain, which was voted out of the Labour Party, British Labour Party, 2 years ago. Most of the money comes from Labour Party members. For instance, in 1982, a collection at the Labour Party annual conference in Galway realised £600. Sources within the Labour Party in Galway West state that although there are only about a dozen militant activists, the contribution made to the fighting fund amounted to £500. The activities of militant since their arrival here in 1972 has always been a source of controversy. A prominent Labour Party personality at that time recalls, they literally imported militants into the various constituencies and put them up in digs. They were anti-everything and wanted to take over. There were always constant battles with them. One of the leading members of the Labour Party has accused militant of driving members away from the party. A number of people, said this member of the parliamentary party, have been expressing disquiet at their takeover of Labour youth in the constituencies. Other members of the parliamentary party are more cautious. I haven't formed an opinion yet, said Mervyn Taylor, TD. Supporters of militant now have a foothold in Labour youth as a result of election wins at the last two Labour Party conferences. These were open elections with nothing furtive going on in the background, states Ray McLaughlin, chairman of Labour youth. Declan Connolly has no doubt about the latest expulsion moves after an internal party committee report. It is an attempt by the supporters of Fine Gael within the party to stifle our commitment to opposition to the coalition policies of Thatcherism and monetarism, he said. The decision to place the expulsion moves on the agenda for next Thursday's meetings of the Administrative Council caused disagreement among the party officers. Five of the seven party officers were present when the decision was made, but the party chairman, Senator Michael D. Hagan, spoke out against putting the matter on the agenda. His view is that the party should be able to tolerate different viewpoints. The militant supporters have not been very successful in having their supporters chosen as electing candidates. Only Anne Wilkinson in Donegal has managed to get into the party ticket. Militant first came into the national spotlight in the mid-70s when a meeting of a Longford Vocational Education Committee attempted to discipline a local vocational teacher who was alleged to have written a critique in the Militant Irish Monthly magazine. This week's raid on the militant headquarters has sparked off a storm. The home of Plaque Spoke activists, Rory and Patsy Buckley, was searched on the 1st of September. Shortly after Christmas, the home of Longford Independent Councillor Michael Brennan also raided by a joint Garda Army operation. No charges have been preferred as a result of any of these searches. The claim that the raid of the militant headquarters was in search of Dominic McGlinchey is dismissed by Declan Connolly as absolute nonsense. Apart from the fact that the current issue of Militant Irish Monthly carries a full-page article entitled Why Socialists Must Oppose Sinn Féin, militants have in the past refused to support the demands of the H-Bloc, IRA, ILA hunger strikers. In 1988, Joe Higgins was selected as a Labour candidate in Dublin West, which sparked some discussion. Spring in bitter feud with Higgins. Labour Party leader Dick Spring this week distanced himself from the campaign to stop militant Labour activist from Lisbon, Joe Higgins, from running for the party in Dublin West. But in a bitter war of words between the two, Mr. Spring made no secret of his opposition to Mr. Higgins' militant grouping. Mr. Higgins, brother of former county football selector Liam, accused Mr. Spring of having a personal vendetta against him and trying to stop him from running for a Labour seat. But Mr. Spring dismissed the criticism as pure nonsense and condemned militant as a destructive force within the Labour Party. He said the group took its orders from its sister organisation of the same name in London, which was trying to destroy the British Labour Party. Mr. Higgins said there is a lot of disappointment in Kerry that Mr. Spring should be so vindictive against myself simply because he disagrees with my political views. There is a political witch hunt against socialists in Dublin West. Dick Spring fully backed efforts to obstruct my nomination and has now supported the efforts to dissolve the three branches that support me out of the seven in Dublin West. It is an effort to gerrymander the constituency. But Mr. Spring said that the battle in Dublin West has absolutely nothing to do with him. He said members of Militant Dublin had tried to take over Dublin West and now the constituency was fighting back. In an obvious reference to the section of the party identified with Kildare deputy Emmet Stagg. Mr. Spring said the campaign against Militant was started by another left-wing group in the party. As a leader of the party, my concern is to protect the party. He urged Militant supporters to give up their association with the organisation if they were interested in participating in the Labour Party. Militant was a separate organisation, he said, with its own head office, its own printing press and its own funds, using the Labour Party as a cloak for its operation. Mr. Higgins said Mr. Spring had a vendetta against him because of his trenchant opposition to Coalition since the early 70s. He said Coalition had bought Labour to its lowest vote, general election vote, 6.4% since 1933, and Mr. Spring had abandoned it because of the outrage of the grassroots of the party. The Labour leader said, "That type of silly statement ignores the realities of political life. I'm a practical working politician. Maybe Joe Higgins should go back to his Fianna Fáil roots where he comes from." At the time of going to press, the Administrative Council of the Labour Party was still meeting to decide on the move to dissolve the Ballyfermot, Palmerstown and Clonsilla branches. So, actually, Higgins being selected as a candidate seems to have brought the whole thing to a head. The following year, in early 1989, the annual Labour Party conference took place. Militant tendency expelled by a majority of 2-1. By a majority of at least 2-1, delegates voted yesterday to expel members of the left-wing militant tendency from the party. After an emotional and sometimes heated debate, a resolution from the Dublin West Constituency Council that membership of the group was incompatible with membership of the Labour Party and that militant tendency members should be excluded was passed in a show of hands. Two Labour TDs, Emmet Stagg, who lost his position as vice chairman of the party, and Michael D. Higgins, voted against. At the close of the debate, party leader Dick Spring called for unity and said there could not be a party within a party. "We are not talking about witch hunts or expulsions, but about choice, whether you belong to Labour or to militant tendency," he declared. He said that militant tendency had their own separate organisation, their own head office, their own newspaper and their own officials. "We are giving them a choice to come back into the mainstream of Labour and to be fully active within the party," stated Mr. Spring, adding that there was room in Labour for different traditions and different voices. Dingleborn Joe Higgins, a leading member of militant tendency, made an impassioned plea to the 1,000 delegates to reject the expulsion motion. He strongly rebutted what he described as crude slurs and distortions made about the group during the debate. "The fact that a person supported a small newspaper published by the group did not warrant expulsion from the party. I believe that we can accommodate different traditions and different ideas," Mr. Higgins remarked. Cork Labour TD Toddy O'Sullivan supported the motion, said he resented the terminology used by Mr. Higgins and delegates should not be intimidated by it. While he regretted the loss of some young people, he hoped they would come back into the Labour Party. Deputy Michael D. Higgins, appealing for unity, feared that the motion would unleash a tiresome and wasteful debate on the questions of expulsions, something not needed at this time when an all-out effort should be made to oppose right-wing parties. In the past, he had worked side-by-side with militant tendency members and they were amongst the hardest workers he had met. However, there were aspects of secrecy and a lack of openness which he found offensive. "It is time we were totally open," he went on. "We should talk to each other more to be big enough to recognise each other's differences." Mr. Michael Nagle, Dublin West, seconding the expulsion motion, claimed that militant tendency favoured a Fred variation between this country and the UK. This elicited cries of "lies, lies, lies" from the floor. How many votes would Dick Spring get in proudly Republican North Kerry with such a policy, he asked. None, I would suggest. So militant were expelled from the Labour Party in 1989. Now, they appealed, there was appeals and all sorts of things going on. But by 1991, Joe Higgins, the local elections, Joe Higgins ran as an independent Labour candidate. Running in Mulhuddart, he topped the poll, polling 1,281 votes. And in the 1992 general election, Higgins ran as an independent Labour candidate, polling 1,407 votes. Now, independent Labour was the mantle that militant in Dublin West used rather than calling themselves militant. And the kind of the those that had been in Labour Youth and left called themselves the Youth Rights Campaign, I think. At the same time. It wasn't until 1993 that militant Labour actually decided to call themselves militant, or the militant tendency. A new political party, Militant Labour, is to be launched later today. The party is being organised by former members of the Labour Party expelled for supporting the socialist newspaper Militant, as well as current members of the party. According to former Labour dissident Joe Higgins, the party has also attracted young people who are involved in Youth Against Racism and trade union and community activists who want to create a genuine socialist alternative to the parties of big business. Members of Militant were expelled from Labour at the party's annual conference in Tralee in 1999 after a long and bitter confrontation with the party leadership. Militant Labour will be a campaigning socialist organisation, said Councillor Higgins. He challenged the role of Dick Spring and the trade unions who have become part of the conservative establishment in Irish society. And a clear warning was laid down last night that the Labour Party would not tolerate any attempt by the extremist militant organisation which reforms in Ireland today to infiltrate it. The successful takeover of Labour Youth and other parts of Labour in the late 70s and onwards by Militant provided the fuel for the bitter internal battles which divided Labour up to 1989. Last night, Labour national organiser Senator Pat Magner warned that Labour has long since decided that membership of Militant was incompatible with membership of the party. But the driving force behind the recreation of Militant, Councillor Joe Higgins launched a strong attack on the Labour leadership and the trade unions, accusing both of having become part of the Conservative establishment. Expelled from Labour in 1989, Councillor Higgins said the party's decision to go into coalition had betrayed the trust of thousands of people who had voted for them. He claimed that current members of Labour want to take up membership of Militant, along with those expelled before 1989. Members of Youth Against Racism and trade unionists and community activists. Militant Labour will be campaigning socialist organisation. It will campaign for a fighting strategy and socialist policies in the unions, workplaces, colleges and schools. And he denied that Militant Labour in Ireland would be totally separate from its namesake in England, which was launched by a former Labour House of Commons MP, Dave Nellist, on London on Tuesday. The organisation said still not registered as a political party, but would do so shortly, since it wanted to run candidates in next local elections, said Councillor Higgins, who holds a seat in Dublin West. Responding last night, Senator Magner said that any Labour member should know Militant was a rigidly controlled, semi-secret organisation. Their idea of dialogue is akin to brainwashing, said Senator Magner, who is presented the case for expulsion of Councillor Higgins and other militants at the Labour Annual Conference in 1989 in Tralee. The party managed to stand in local elections, and in 1994 there were town council corporation, some corporations and urban district council elections, and Seamus O'Brien ran for Militant Labour for UROS UDC, and he was elected. So he was Militant Labour's second elected representative after Joe Higgins. Harry Hutchinson ran under the Militant banner in local elections in the north, but didn't win a seat. And as mentioned before, they also ran as Labour Coalition in the Northern Ireland Forum elections and under the trade union, Labour and Trade Union Group banner as well. But they never had anyone elected in Northern Ireland. In 1986, Brian Lenihan Sr. died, and there was a by-election in Dublin West. And all through this period in the 90s, Militant had been campaigning against water charges. And it was through that campaign that Joe Higgins gained a lot of attention. Joe Higgins is the anti-water charges candidate, and he was running as a militant Labour candidate. And he was also supported by the Federation of Dublin anti-water charges campaign. In Dublin, the unjust double taxation called water charges were voted in by the unholy alliance of councillors from Dáil parties, Fianna Fáil, Fine Gael, the Green Party, Labour Party and Progressive Democrats and Democratic Left. They have imposed this new tax on already hard-pressed PAYE taxpayers, while at the same time writing off 500 million in tax amnesty for the super rich. While pensioners are brought to court to face water disconnection orders, Edna Fitzgerald, Minister for Ethics, is inviting tax consultants for the wealthy to £100 a head lunch to meet the Minister for Finance before he finalises the finance bill for this year. They have now postponed the local elections from June this year to at least 2 years away to save the skins of their councillors from the anger of the people. Make Dublin mess by election. A referendum on the water charges. Vote number one, Councillor Joe Higgins, militant Labour. Joe Higgins is proud to stand on his record as extremely hard-working militant Labour County Councillor for almost 5 years in Dublin West. He is chairman of the Federation of Dublin Anti-Water Charges Campaigns and its coordinator in Blanchardstown, Mulhuddart, Palmerstown, Lucan and North Clondalkin. Joe Higgins has worked in the local community against rezoning and land speculation in Lucan, Clonsilla and in defence of Greenbelt and the Liffey Valley, in opposition to the massive dump in Mulhuddart and for alternative strategy with a major reduction of waste at source and recycling, in organising against the placing of microwave transmitters in residential areas because of serious concerns about damage to people's health, and was a leading organiser for the renowned Shackleton Garden and Parkland to be taken into public ownership for the community, an opportunity criminally wasted by the present government. Played a leading role in ensuring that Blanchardstown Town Centre became a reality. So there was a tax, you kind of got that, there was tax amnesty and stuff at the time. But Higgins nearly won the seat. I think he was 252 votes short in the end. And nearly caused a massive shock for the, I suppose, to take the political establishment, to use that kind of language. But it was nearly a shock. So militant Labour realised that they were in a good position to get a TD at the following election. In October 1996, the Socialist Party was launched. Ireland's latest political party last night revealed plans to bring capitalism to its knees. Leaders of the new no-frills Socialist Party predict they will capture three seats in Dublin at the next election. Dublin councillor Joe Higgins, one of the party's founder members, said they will provide a voice for thousands of disenfranchised worker voters in working class areas who've been abandoned by mainstream parties. We'll be putting up five candidates in the next general election and are confident that three will be elected. We aim to be the voice of the isolated majority who have been left out in the cold by Irish politics, he said. Rising from the ashes of militant Labour, the ultra-left wing of the Labour Party, who were expelled in a purge by Dick Spring in 1989, the Socialist Party is advocating a back-to-basics style socialism. Labour and Democratic Left have wholly abandoned their principles. They're virtually no different between the mainstream parties at the moment. The Socialist Party will disrupt this cosy complacency. Councillor Higgins was confident the Socialist Party would attract voters from every social class. Once we put forward what we're about, democratic socialism, and what we are against, the rampant capitalism which is destroying Irish society, I am confident that many will join us. Tackling the double of taxation of service charges would be on the agenda, but there would be other social evils such as unemployment and drug addiction, which the Socialist Party would be adopting a hard line on. So Militant Labour was now renaming itself as the Socialist Party. So, and as the Socialist Party still exists, that's where we're going to leave it. Thanks very much for listening. Thanks to everybody who's subscribed to the podcast. Thanks especially those who support the Patreon, that supports the website and the podcast. It's patreon.com/electionlit. Thanks.